And we are ready to get started with our public hearing this afternoon. We only have, limited time, and we've got a relatively full agenda. So I just want to review quickly that we expect to talk about. We're going to hear from the independent monitoring team regarding their recent report, IMRH. We're going to hear from the city and the OAG about TRED. We'll hear from the city and the OAG about ISRs. We're going to talk briefly about the search warrant process, and then if we have time, we'll hear briefly from the coalition as well, if they have some comments. But I'm expecting we'll be able to wrap all of this up by just a few minutes after 2 o'clock this afternoon. If it runs to maybe 2:10, that's also fine, but I'd like to make sure that we keep things moving. So why don't I begin by asking for the independent monitoring team's presentation regarding its recent report. And even before I hear from you, I want to say what a great job I think you did bringing this into a more controllable, readable format that was easier for me to digest. And I'm expecting this, that's also true for everybody else who's interested in this process as well. So we'll hear from the monitor.
Thank you very much, Your Honor, for convening us here today. And yes, we will continue every monitoring period to try to make our reports more digestible for the public. We were able to work that out with the parties and the court. On November 1st, 2023, the independent monitoring team filed IMR-8 and part one of the comprehensive assessment, which included the independent monitoring team's assessments of compliance through June 30th, 2023. In our report, we detailed the significant amount of work that remains for the City of Chicago and the CPD to reach compliance under the consent decree. And we expressed hope that through transparency, the city and the CPD will more efficiently plan for and achieve compliance. We hope to hear about some of those plans today and the progress that they're making. Today's hearing is one step forward towards additional transparency. While the consent decree permits the IMT to report on progress on the consent decree through semi-annual reports, the court and the independent monitoring team has received recent community feedback regarding the need to hear more regularly and current updates on tangible progress under the consent decree, including details on existing challenges and the plans to overcome them. This is the first regularly scheduled public hearing for the consent decree. As schedules permit for the parties in the court, we will endeavor to hold these status hearings on a monthly basis. We also intend to include opportunities in the court hearings for direct community feedback on at least a quarterly basis. This will include in-person and virtual opportunities for community feedback with the court. And as I've said in the past and continue to believe, the consent decree will not be finished until Chicagoans feel changes in the policing in their neighborhoods. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues, Anthony Reyes-Sepulveda, who will address our most recent report, and Meredith DiCarlo, who will describe our assessments of the CPD's internal review procedures for uses of force and investigative stops at the end of the 8th reporting period.
Thank you. As Independent Monitor Hickey referenced, under the consent decree, the Independent Monitoring Team reports on the city's and the Chicago Police Department's progress under the consent decree on a semi-annual basis. Most recently, the Independent Monitoring Team filed Independent Monitoring Report 8 and Part 1 of the Comprehensive Assessment. This report is available on our website, cpdmonitoringteam.com, and includes the compliance status for all original requirements, as well as the principal achievements and challenges to the city's ability to reach full and effective compliance. Through June 30th, 2023, the city and the city's entities have achieved at least preliminary compliance, the first of three levels of compliance, with most of the original requirements. The city and its entities have achieved full compliance with a comparatively few monitorable paragraphs. We expect to file part two of the comprehensive assessment early next year, which will include the independent monitoring team's recommendations for changes to the consent decree that we believe are necessary to accelerate full and effective compliance and achieve and sustain the intended results of the consent decree. These recommendations will incorporate feedback we have received and will continue to receive from the parties and the members of Chicago's communities. The City of Chicago and the Office of Illinois Attorney General, as the parties of the consent decree, will ultimately determine what modifications, if any, are made. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Meredith DiCarlo.
Thank you. Today, we expect to hear from the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department regarding ongoing efforts regarding the CPD's internal review procedures for uses of force and investigative stops. Although its name has changed over the years, the CPD's Tactical Review and Evaluation Division, or TRED, was started in 2017 to review and analyze use of force incidents. As required by paragraphs 574 and 575 of the consent decree, TRED's duties include reviewing documentation and information about use of force incidents for sufficiency of reporting, second, analyzing trends, and third, identifying concerns and making recommendations about tactics, equipment, training, and policy. TRED reviews a sample of level one uses of force, the lowest level, all level two uses of force, and supports the work of the Force Review Board in analyzing level three uses of force, the most serious level. Over the years, TRED's responsibilities have expanded. It now reviews and analyzes firearm pointing incidents, foot pursuits, wrong raid search warrants, and investigatory stops and pat-downs, including stops for loitering ordinance violations. TRED also publishes semi-annual public reports with its analysis and findings. While TRED does not have a disciplinary function, it identifies individual training opportunities and can make recommendations to address systemic concerns for individual units or the CPD as a whole. Overall, the IMT has been impressed with TRED's work, and our primary critique in recent reporting periods, including the latest report, is that the CPD and the city need to ensure that TRED has adequate resources, including staff. We look forward to hearing more from the city and the Chicago Police Department today regarding these efforts. Your Honor?
Yes, thank you. I don't have further questions for the independent monitoring team right now. I think our next step will be to hear from the city about TRED and also from OAG about its views on progress we're making there. So we'll begin with the city.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Jennifer Bagby, Deputy Corporation Counsel. We have with us today Commander Sean Joyce of the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform, and he is the commander over the TRED unit, and he's going to explain to you and to the members of the public the important work that TRED is doing. We would agree with the monitor's assessment that obviously staffing is always a concern. TRED has seen increased staffing since the spring and over the past 18 months. But Your Honor, the city recognizes staffing needs across the board within the police department and to continue the important work. So Commander Joyce, do you need me to share the screen or can you share your screen?
Noon, Jennifer, I'll give it a shot first. Let's see here. Okay. Thank you. And Your Honor and everyone else on the hearing today. My name is Sean Joyce. I am the commander in the Office of Constitutional Policing and Reform and oversee the operations of the TRED unit. I'm going to first give an overview of the TRED unit. As previously mentioned, TRED is an acronym for Tactical Review and Evaluation Division. I want to give a very brief, quick history. The unit was actually established in 2017 prior to the consent decree, and it was in response to changes in the department's use of force policy. We looked to a few other cities that were already doing something similar, Los Angeles, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. The main difference between their review units and our review unit here is that theirs was disciplinary in nature, and ours is not. In the city of Chicago, we already have entities which administer discipline and then conduct discipline investigations, being COPA, as well as the Bureau of Internal Affairs. So the goals of our unit are to look for training recommendations. And that could be at the officer level, that could be at a unit level, and that could also be at a department level based on the results of our reviews. And ultimately, what we want to see is interactions between officers and the public to become safer for both officers as well as members of the public. The responsibilities, generally speaking, of the TRED unit, we review those top three stars is where we spend most of our time and our efforts. It's we're reviewing use of force, we're reviewing firearm pointing incidents, as well as foot pursuits. As you can see, we've also been tasked with wrong raids or search warrants. Just by policy, that search warrant wrong raid category comes in two types there. One is where maybe a search warrant is served at a location other than the one that's listed on the search warrant, or when officers actually are serving a search warrant and they make perhaps entry into a premise and they observe circumstances to be significantly different than the ones that actually gave support to the probable cause for the search. In other words, perhaps they received some information that was not accurate. That's also could be considered a wrong raid. For the record, we have not had any wrong raid reviews in 2022 and not as of yet in 2023. Of course, in all things we do, we're always looking to identify trends, patterns, and best practices so we could spread them throughout our department. And importantly, we also conduct training for our pre-service supervisors. And what I mean by pre-service supervisors, these are members of our department who are currently in training to be promoted to the ranks of either sergeant, lieutenant, captain, or even our command staff ranks. And last but not least, we also produce two reports a year, one June 30, 6 months report, as well as a year-end TRED report. This slide basically talks about the field response when there is a use of force. There's an on-scene response at the unit level by field supervisors, and they conduct such activities as they're interviewing witnesses, they're interviewing subjects of the use of force, the involved members. They look at body-worn camera video, in-car camera video, as well as any video that are pod cameras. Those are the cameras that are affixed as various poles throughout the city may have caught. They review all the documentation related to the unit, and then they do two things. One, they make a compliance determination whether or not that use of force was in compliance with department policy. They also have the opportunity to take corrective action at the unit level before it gets to TRED. When it does get to TRED, however, we are subject to reviewing those items in that right column, which is any related video, again, all the documentation, and we look for training opportunities during those review for our members that were involved in that incident. I want to speak just for a minute here about levels of force, to inform those on the call here. There are three levels, and level one, two, and three, level one being lesser uses of force, with level three being our highest use of force, the most serious use of force. These are not exhaustive lists of the type of tactics in each of those levels. It's worth noting that a level one use of force, which might be something as basic as, you know, like a wrist lock or an arm bar, could become a level two use of force if there is an injury or complaint of injury. Level two uses of forces are those level ones where there's injury, complaint of injury, as well as basically if various tools are used by police officers, which may include taser, OC spray, or any number of other options you listed there. And of course, our level three use of force, our most serious use of force, which are, you know, potentially deadly force, discharge of a firearms, you know, and a strike from an impact weapon at the head or neck, chokeholds, carotid artery restraints, and any other deadly uses of force. And the reason this is important for us to more or less bucket our uses of force at these three levels, because it impacts on the likelihood that TRED is going to conduct a review of that incident. As was previously mentioned, we do take a representative sample of level ones for review, all of level twos, and we support the force review board in conducting those reviews of level three uses of force. So the scope of our review, as mentioned, we're always looking to identify better tactics, equipment, or training opportunities for those members in the use of force. We work very closely with our good folks in training and support group to help develop training, as well as we also work, frankly, with the research and development if we see any policy issues that need to be addressed. This slide contains a few of the examples of where we have assisted our training support group on various training efforts, including public safety interviews, high-risk vehicle stops, transitioning weapons. We look for policy compliance. Of course, we're always on the lookout to make everybody safer. So safety considerations are a big part of our reviews. And completeness in reporting, we look at all the documentation related. Now, I mentioned that earlier, we are not a disciplinary unit, and that is by and large very true. However, whenever we do come across issues that do require further investigation or discipline, we will also make those reports as needed. Most recently, I put an example there where it came to us, review an incident that was actually involving a level 3 use of force, and we noticed that COPA had not been notified, and we went ahead and facilitated that notification for COPA for their investigation. So what we call training opportunities that we recommend, debriefings, basically. And all our trainers, it's not just their opinion whether an officer needs training. A reviewer looks at it, and then it's looked at by a sergeant. And if the sergeant agrees with the reviewer's debriefing recommendations, then it goes to the lieutenant here in the TRED unit, who will conduct the final review. And most importantly, what we want to do is ensure that our officers in the field, our supervisors in the field, become true partners in this with us, and they see the benefits of us making constant adjustments to their tactics, so it's made safer for them as well as members of the public. Basically, our training recommendations could be completed at two levels. One is at the unit level. It's back at the unit where the officer works every day, and that could be something simple as sitting down with one of their supervisors, reviewing any number of the like training aids. So we would say the streaming videos that are produced by our training academy, training bulletins, or our department directives. For more serious, perhaps issues that are caught in our reviews, I'll say, for example, like an accidental discharge of a taser. That's something where we may recommend that the officers actually go back to the training support group, to the training academy, and receive that training or repeat training that they may have previously had. And you can see the list there of other training opportunities that officers can receive at the academy based on our recommendations from our reviews. So this best option is what we pretty much teach our reviewers here. We want you to identify these training opportunities in the course of review, address it, and document it. Now, that's what we do here at TRED, but as I mentioned, we do pre-service training for our supervisors. More importantly, we emphasize this during that pre-service training. We love to see here at TRED reviews come to us, and we see that at the unit level, a sergeant, an investigating lieutenant has already done this. They've identified training issues, they've addressed them, and maybe they've already debriefed their officers. Ultimately, that's the best model that we all seek, is to have this type of constant seeking of improvement, you know, this culture change of always seeking to get better, to occur at the unit level. So in terms of our feedback, these are the, we think, benefits, and this is how we encourage our officers to see our work here. We don't want to be looked at as Monday morning quarterbacks. We want the officers to realize that these are the benefits. Improved safety, catching these small issues before they grow, we could potentially mitigate litigation through our training opportunities, and most importantly, a constant communication between the TRED unit, the academy, and research and development. Daily, multiple times daily, we are in touch with these other two units in the police department, constantly reviewing if there's any tweaks that could be made to the training academy where that training is developed and administered, or to research and development, which is drafting our policies upon which training is based. I'm just going to take a second to look at 2022. And we're going to kind of take it by the numbers here. And the year, you can see we had about 3.3 million calls for service in 2022. That yielded 41,449 arrests. Of that, almost 3,600 became use of force incidents. And of those almost 3,600, we see that there were 48 level 3 use of force, our highest, most serious use of force. This graphic will basically give you a good idea of how many use of force incidents we are reviewing here in TRED. So citywide, once again, of all the use of force in 2022, 2,288 or 63% were level ones. Another 36% 1,306 were level twos, and approximately 1% or 48 were level threes. Now, watch operations lieutenants at the unit level investigated 100% of all these level ones and twos in that initial investigation that takes place at the unit level. TRED subsequently then reviewed 53% of all level ones and 100% of all level twos, as is our policy. Of all the TRRs reviewed by TRED in 2022, it's approximately 71%. So it's an incredible comprehensive undertaking that we perform here at TRED in terms of reviewing use of force incidents among our membership. Now, the most serious ones are always at the scene, investigated by a command staff member, usually at the rank of deputy chief. That's where that investigation takes place. The force review board reviews basically every level three use of force, and that force review board is comprised of our superintendent, our first deputy, all our chiefs, and that is where the most serious use of force are evaluated for training opportunities. And of course, COPA has jurisdiction over disciplinary investigations for all our level three uses of force. Again, just a reiteration of the volume of work that comes through the TRED unit is on this slide. And once again, notably, that 71% of all uses of force being reviewed by the Chicago Police Department remains consistent. It was the same thing in 2021. And here we are in 2022. And even though the year hasn't ended yet, it's looking like we're going to be right about at that same level for 2023. A tremendous percentage of the use of force are getting that secondary review in the TRED unit here. In addition, we also started reviewing 100% of firearm pointing incidents, basically when an officer points their firearm at someone, and 100% of foot pursuits as we started reviewing in 2023. So these are current year-to-date 2023 numbers. I shouldn't say year-to-date, I should say through October 2023 numbers. And again, these are the big three categories that we take a look here at TRED. And as you can see, there's really no surprises in terms of the activity. So on the left is tactical response reports by month, total number. In the center column, you see firearm pointing incidents by month. And the right column is foot pursuit reports generated by month. In the warmer months, we tend to have more calls of service, more arrests, more activity. And as you see kind of spikes in each of these three activity areas that kind of tail off as toward the end of the year again when the weather cools. And so basically May through roughly September, we see a spike in activity here, with July, the midsummer, kind of being the highest in all three categories before things start to tail off again. I just want to speak for a moment about a new kind of like an IT fix that we started using this year called the IDR, or the Incident Debriefing Report System. And before this year, going back to that previous slide, we could have one single incident that involved a use of force that generated a tactical response report. It could also involve a firearm pointing incident as well as a foot pursuit. And previously, a different reviewer would get maybe each one of those that were involved in the same incident. It was inefficient, frankly. So we implemented this IDR system, which now captures one or more of those three categories in one incident for review at once. It allows us to take a more holistic view of how the incident unfolded and what training opportunities there might be in that related to that incident. And as a result, we have seen an increase because mainly taking on foot pursuit reviews as well as firearm pointing reviews, we've seen an increase in the backlog of our IDR system. A lot of information on this page. I guess I'll just draw your attention to these again, our three main categories on the left: firearm pointing incident, foot pursuit, TRRs, by month this year. If you would pay a special attention to really the blue bars and the green bars. So the blue bars are how many of these incident debriefing reports are generated each month, and the green bars are how many reviews we've completed at TRED. So you see pretty much through July, the green and blue bars are at the same level, indicating that all the IDRs that came into the TRED unit for review have been completed. However, as you get toward August and certainly September and October, you see that the blue bars are outpacing the green bars significantly. And this period, that represents our backlog. These are IDRs waiting for assignment to a reviewer to complete the review. This is our IDR backlog from July 17th through November 7th, I believe the date is there, yes. And as you can see, it increases as we go. More and more of these IDRs have been coming in because, again, these are busier months for us here in the Chicago Police Department. And we anticipate that over the next few months, as things slow down, we'll be able to start chewing away at that backlog and get through it. But as mentioned already, this work takes time and this work requires staffing. This is our current staffing situation in the TRED unit. Commander, myself, two lieutenants, a sergeant, and 47 police officers. As always, it's a struggle to maintain staffing because there are demands throughout our department for full duty officers to complete these reviews. Additionally, we are currently undertaking efforts to hire part-time civilian employees to assist us with these reviews. In fact, we have four that will be starting at our training academy to get some policy refresher training. They are starting this upcoming Monday, and we're in the hopes of getting them up to speed, bringing them to the unit to assist us with our backlog. These are the requirements for our full duty current Chicago police officer members who are assigned to the TRED unit. Minimum 5 years experience, acceptable disciplinary record. We need folks who have strong skills in computer operation, writing skills, and sound knowledge of our use of force policies, as well as the Fourth Amendment and other department policies that come under review. Every Chicago police sworn member receives 40 hours of training a year. The members in the TRED unit not only receive those 40 hours, they receive an additional 40 hours because they are our use of force subject matter experts. So this is a list of training that they received in 2022, and they're receiving similar training here in 2023. Last but not least, I'll just talk very briefly about our reporting effort here. Two reports, the June 30th one, more or less summarizing 6 months of data generated by the TRED unit, as well as a year-end report. We also, in aggregating data, it's contributed to our public-facing use of force dashboard. These two efforts definitely facilitate our pattern trend identification and certainly enhances our transparency. That is the quick, as I could make it, overview of the TRED unit. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Commander Joyce. I think we will have some questions, but I want to turn first to the OAG and allow the OAG to make a presentation there on their position on all this.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. This is Assistant Attorney General Sam Kennedy, and I just want to follow up with a couple of brief points. Our office's main concern at this point is the size and what seems to be the expanding nature of the TRED backlog. So when we appeared before Your Honor at a public status hearing last November, we raised our concerns about the TRED backlog and staffing levels, and unfortunately, those concerns remain. Now, as you've seen, TRED is struggling to keep up with the incoming reports. From what we understand, in the beginning of July 2023, the backlog was at 2,702, and since then, it's nearly doubled, bringing us to about 5,116. Put in terms of a timeline, this means that TRED is about 3 months behind in terms of the rate at which it's reviewing its reports. This poses a pretty significant problem considering that the consent decree actually requires TRED to review firearm pointing incidents within 30 days of their occurrence. Moreover, with respect to all of the other types of incidents, uses of force that TRED is required to review, we believe that reviewing them quickly and providing feedback to the officers as quickly as possible prevents those officers from repeating the same mistakes or, conversely, assures the officer that their conduct is consistent with appropriate policy and training. Now, as I've pointed out, we believe that this backlog is primarily due to the fact that TRED is critically understaffed. Now, of course, Commander Joyce is correct in that TRED has made some hiring efforts recently, but the fact remains that in February of this year, TRED was at 54 officers, and currently it's at 47. This 47 is up from 45 in July and 46 in September, but is still not enough to address the ever-increasing backlog. Now, over the last year, CPD has proposed hiring as many as 20 part-time retired officers to assist in TRED reviews, but at this time has only extended a couple. I think Commander Joyce said four offers so far, and this is not going to be enough to address this backlog. Additionally, CPD has continued to occasionally deploy TRED officers on patrol duties, which again interferes with their ability to combat this increasing backlog. Paragraphs 193 and 575 of the consent decree require that the CPD ensures TRED has sufficient resources to perform its reviews. We don't currently believe that the CPD has provided TRED with these resources. Again, we've been raising concerns about this since last November, and we've continued to raise them in our public comments to the monitor's reports. TRED is an area where CPD showed some early progress, but subsequently has stepped backwards. In the third, fourth, and fifth reporting periods, the March 2020 through December 2021, the CPD was in secondary compliance with paragraph 193. But since the sixth reporting period, the CPD lost secondary compliance because TRED was chronically understaffed, and it has since not regained secondary compliance. Similarly, CPD previously reached secondary compliance with paragraph 575 in January of 2021, but lost compliance with all of that paragraph in January of 2022, again due to inadequate staffing. CPD has yet to regain any compliance regarding 575. TRED is a critical component of the consent decree. We've raised our concerns several times now, but the backlog only seems to be increasing, and we are concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. I actually did have one question, and it relates to Mr. Kennedy's concerns, and that is, I saw that it looked as though during the first several months of 2022, numbers in were about the same as numbers out, which means you're not carving into the backlog, but at least you're not making things worse. But then there was this big drop off in August. So what explains that? Or did I misunderstand the numbers? Did people leave it? Why was there this crash? I would expect, you know, more or less a decline, but it looked like we went from approximately staying even or staying somewhat even to falling dramatically behind.
I think, is that the slide, Your Honor, that was showing month by month where the ins, the outs, the bar graph?
Yeah.
So that is the slide the Commander Joyce is talking about that would show that through August, they have all caught up. So it's showing that the cases left to be reviewed are those that is the backlog. So as they move through the reviews of prior months, the number for in will start to match the number of reviewed. But so that's where the commander, I think, was showing they're about 3 months behind. And he can tell you where they should be ideally in terms of turnaround time.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, in terms of turnaround time, obviously, as mentioned, the quicker we can get officers that information, that feedback, their use of force, the better it is for them going forward to make those adjustments to their tactics. I mean, ideally, we'd like to be somewhere between 30 and 60 days would be great. And Your Honor, just to address a little bit that slide. So that slide is a snapshot in time. And the slide you're seeing in is pretty much up through November. If we would have looked at that same slide back in the first few months of the year, you would have seen a similar lag. But as we, like, for instance, we are going to be we closed out our June 30th for our reporting period, and everything through June 30th is done. But that backlog, you'll notice the difference between the height and that blue bar and that green bar. That will continue to march forward, and the months since June 30th, July, August, September, October, those will fill in. But it's kind of the gap between today and when you see those bars kind of evening out. that does represent the backlog, and it's approximately around 3 months at this time. Again, we'd like it to be, you know, no more than 30 or 60 days. Oftentimes, it's going to be at least 30, just because we can't review use of force until all the paperwork is uploaded at the unit level. So sometimes there's some natural kind of delays, like somebody who was going to upload a report about the incident went on furlough or went on the medical or got injured. But largely, we would like to see that 30 to 60 day become or a lot closer to 30 days become the gap. But right now it is approximately 30.
Okay. I think I may have misunderstood the bar. So in other words, the second bar in each month was how many of those are now closed, as opposed to how many of those did we close in the month of January?
That's right. I could bring, if it would help, I could bring it back up to take a look.
No, I think your explanation satisfies me. I think I misunderstood what was being represented here. So in other words, the first bar would represent how many claims or how many complaints came in or how many reports came in. The second bar would represent how many of those have now been closed.
That's right, Your Honor.
Great. All right. I think I got that then. And I do obviously share Mr. Kennedy's concerns, and I think everybody does as well, that kind of backlog is not helpful. Just as you pointed out, Commander Joyce, the sooner we get feedback to people, the more rapid we can see the appropriate change. And the other thing is that, you know, I think it's a lot more meaningful when you hear feedback immediately rather than months down the road when you maybe don't even remember the episode all that well or have reconstructed it in your mind. So it might just be important to recognize that I share Mr. Kennedy's concern that we have to make sure that TRED staffing is viewed with the urgency that it really requires. So keep people bringing people in. I think you mentioned the possibility, or maybe it was Ms. Bagby, of bringing in non-sworn officers to do some of that work and anything that can be done to assist with even the administrative assistant type responsibilities would be very valuable, I'm sure. Well, that was one of the items on our agenda. The next item on our agenda is ISRs. And here too, we'll hear first from the city and then from OAG.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since the entry of the stipulation adding investigatory stops and the enforcement of gang and loitering ordinances to the consent decree, that work and the review of those investigatory stop reports has been built into also what is part of the TRED unit. So Commander Joyce also has some slides to share with you related to investigatory stops.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'll provide a brief overview of the Fourth Amendment Stop Review Unit, what we refer to here as 4ASRU. Just a brief history. March 2015, city enters into an agreement with the ACLU recommending best practices for investigatory stops. April of that year, a class action lawsuit was filed against the city, Smith versus City of Chicago, where it is alleged that there's a pattern and practice of unconstitutional stops and frisks. October of that year, the city first stands a unit called the Integrity Section. They are established to start overseeing investigatory stop reports. Fast forward to May 18th of this year, where the city of Chicago, as well as the Illinois Attorney General's office, negotiate 77 new consent decree paragraphs related to investigatory stops. And in June, additional 77 paragraphs helps facilitate a settlement of the Smith plaintiffs' litigation. Among other parts of the settlement, it is a part of the settlement that the city is to, you know, monitor, report, review, get community engagement, training, accountability measures, all related to investigatory stops conducted by the Chicago Police Department, as well as revisions to our policies in the department of investigatory stops and the enforcement of loitering ordinances. One particular paragraph, 852, kind of gives rise to this new unit that we've developed here this year in the Chicago Police Department. Basically, it's the Fourth Amendment Stop Review Unit, and they are tasked with conducting department-level reviews of a representative sample of ISR's stop reports, including those involved in the enforcement of the loitering ordinances. So the current status of the unit, as of today, we are staffed with 3 sergeants, 12 police officers who do conduct reviews of these ISRs, and there is 1 administrative officer. A little bit going on with this slide. I'll just walk us through it very, very briefly here. So there's 2 periods of time. One's represented on the left side of this page. One's represented on the right side of this page. On the left side, we're looking at ISRs that were produced in the Chicago Police Department from January 1st, 2021 through June 27th, 2023, the stipulation date. According to the consent decree paragraphs that were negotiated, the Chicago Police Department was conduct reviews of approximately 5% of all the ISRs written in that time. The ISRs in the time were approximately 176,680. 5% represents approximately 1,325 ISRs. Just to update you on where we're at with that initial task, of the 1,325 ISRs, our reviewers here in the 4th Amendment Stop Review Unit have reviewed the entire backlog. Now, that's one of the first initial review steps. Next, it goes to supervisors. Supervisors, again, not unlike in the TRED unit with uses of force, take a second look at the reviewer's initial work. And so far, about 3/4 of those initial 1,325, with rounding, it really turned into 1,391 ISRs have been reviewed, completed review at the supervisor level. We anticipate completing the rest of them, certainly by the first week of December. The next step in that process is sending information out to our members who either drafted those ISRs or the supervisor approved those ISRs for any incidents where we have found deficiencies. And just like the TRED unit, we look for training opportunities to refresh them, update them on policy with respect to documenting investigatory stops. Now, we've made pretty good progress with this backlog, but it's certainly notable that on the right side of this page, you see beginning in the post-stipulation period, June 28th through, and these numbers go through November 13th, you can see that in that time, there have been 29,430 more ISRs drafted and approved in the Chicago Police Department. And at this time, we plan to grab a representative sample of that. At this time, we're using 15%. We've done some due diligence in determining what levels of review in terms of percentage of the total ISRs we have to complete to achieve that representative sample, representative demographically, geographically, as well as those ISRs that are related to gang and narcotic loitering enforcement. So currently, what we're calling bucket 2 of these ISRs, there are 4,415 awaiting our review process. The ongoing efforts of this unit, which was just stood up a few months ago, we're trying to develop feedback mechanisms to our officers and supervisors when we detect deficiencies and get those information out to our officers who are drafting these ISRs and our supervisors who are approving them. We are in a daily effort to improve our technology infrastructure, basically our ISR audit function here that kind of draws the ISRs into the unit here so we can conduct our reviews. We're also looking to increase our capacity to administer training with respect to deficiencies we note by members in the field. And that's the overview of the 4 ASR new unit.
So, Your Honor, related to ISRs, as Commander Joyce highlighted, it is worth noting that in the process of getting the stipulation entered, finalized, that they did work to get the pre-existing backlog down and taken care of, and now working to establish the representative sampling in order to be able to move forward with the ISRs that need to be reviewed moving forward. So that is sort of where their work is focusing now.
All right. Again, I may have some questions, but I'd like to hear from the Office of the Attorney General in response to Commander Joyce's report.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Rebecca Newman, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with our office's Special Litigation Bureau. Since appearing in front of Your Honor on August 9th, the parties have been working diligently on reviewing and revising materials related to the department's investigatory stops and protective pat-downs procedures and practices and enforcement of the loitering ordinances. These materials will implement the almost 80-paragraph stipulation negotiated between the parties earlier this year and entered by the court in June. The material submitted by the department first informally on August 25th and then formally on September 18th currently include 4 general orders, a stop report, a stop receipt, and 2 forms for the department's internal review of stop reports and related officer practices. And those are the materials related to investigatory stops and protective pat-downs. The department also submitted 3 special orders and 3 forms related to their enforcement of the loitering ordinances. The general orders pertaining to the investigatory stops and protective pat-downs define relevant topics, instruct officers on how to conduct investigatory and traffic stops, including prohibitions on officers and clear instructions regarding individuals' rights during the entire interaction, and prescribe how supervisors and department reviewers must review and address any discrepancies or deficiencies in officers' investigatory stops and protective pat-down practices, and reporting of said interactions. The stop report, one of the forms the department submitted for review pursuant to the stipulation, requires officers to describe in specific detail the reasonable, articulable suspicion forming the basis for the stop and any subsequent action. The stop receipt, another form submitted by CPD, provides community members with information about their rights and next steps following a stop. The final 2 reports, the stop report deficiency rejection report and the stop report unit monthly audit, will guide supervisors and the Fourth Amendment street stop review units review of officers' practices and completion of forms related to investigatory stops and protective pat-downs. The department has begun staffing the Fourth Amendment street stop review unit, and consistent staffing and management of this unit will be imperative for the department to achieve compliance in this section. Since July of this year, CPD has added 10 officers to the Fourth Amendment street stop review unit, bringing the total number of officers to the unit to 14, plus 2 sergeants acting as supervisors. With the additions of officers to the Fourth Amendment street stop review unit, CPD had previously reported being about halfway through the agreed upon subset of the backlog of investigatory stop reports. We are thrilled to hear that the review of the backlog has been complete. Subsequent analysis of those findings will identify which officers and or supervisors need additional training on how to conduct and document investigatory stops for protective pat-downs and other related actions. We'll also want to see continued progress for the Fourth Amendment street stop reviews units handling of the sample of ISRs from June 28th to November 13th of this year, that 4,415 reports, and how they're going to conduct the sampling and process those reports and any necessary next steps. Since the court entered the stipulation, the parties and the monitoring team have met 3 times to discuss CPD's progress towards compliance. After receiving CPD's submission of materials, our office and the IMT provided written comments to the CPD on those submissions, and we're set to meet again on November 27th. In order to comply with the stipulation, CPD must make several important changes to its current policy and practices relating to the investigatory stops and protective pat-downs, including that CPD will require officers, among other requirements, to communicate with individuals regarding the specific basis for an investigatory stop consistent with principles of procedural justice by identifying themselves by name and rank as soon as it is safe, reasonable, and practical to do so. They must also state the reason for the investigatory stop, again, as soon as it is safe, reasonable, and practical to do so. Other changes to policy and practice require that CPD will prohibit, among other prohibitions, officers from conducting a protective pat-down with or without consent, except where officers have reasonable suspicion based on specific and articulable facts that a person is armed and dangerous. Conducting an investigatory stop or search of an individual based solely on an officer smelling cannabis without any other specific and articulable facts of criminal activity. And conducting a protective pat-down based solely on officer safety without having reasonable articulable suspicion based on specific and articulable facts that a person is armed and dangerous. Also, CPD policy and practice must require that CPD officers will not justify an investigatory stop solely by describing an individual's behavior as suspicious without further articulating specific facts that the individual has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime. It is our intent that in the coming months, we can continue to work collaboratively with CPD and the monitoring team to ensure that these policies and forms comply with the stipulation. In addition, the policies, forms, and report also pertain to the department's conduct and review related to traffic stops. The OAG is deeply concerned about recent public reporting about CPD's traffic stop practices. We continue to evaluate these reports and are committed to listening to the community to determine the best path forward to approach this issue. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Newman. I guess the one quick question I have for CPD, and this sounds like a quick question, maybe take longer to answer it. I understand there's a sampling that's being done. Those investigatory stops and protective pat-downs will be reviewed. What does the review, what questions are asked, what information is gathered in connection with those reviews? If you could just tell me, and maybe that can't be said briefly, I don't know, but I'd like to know generally what the review involves.
Commander Joyce, can you?
So the review involves, it's a document review of the investigatory stop that occurred in the field. And the items that we look for during the course of that review could be administrative in nature or a more serious deficiency. So the administrative items we look for tend to fall in the category of missed a box, maybe marked the wrong box. There's like a conflict between the narrative in this investigatory stop report and the boxes that are checked. And those are more administrative in nature. The more serious ones that we look for is when there is a stop that is not adequately supported by documented reasonable articulable suspicion for the basis for the stop, or if there's a protective pat down performed and there is insufficient documented reasonable articulable suspicion supporting that protective pat down. And those are the more serious deficiencies that we're looking for. And certainly, oftentimes, it's simply a matter of poor documentation on the part of the drafting of the ISR. And those are the feedback loops that we want to create with our members going forward to, like our uses of force, create that culture of always attempting to go forward with self-improvement with respect to our stops.
Is there any, I'm asking a question that maybe is a better question for a police procedures expert, but is there any metric about what percentage of, say, an investigatory stop is likely to result in the recovery of contraband?
Your Honor, I don't have numbers like that off the top of my head here today. We will be reporting out, though, the results of our investigatory stops, items like that, as well as other data, which we think will be helpful to enhance transparency with members in our community.
Okay, well, thank you for that report. I think the final few minutes we have here would be to take a quick look at the search warrant process. And I think on that issue, we'll be hearing from the Office of the Attorney General.
Thanks, Your Honor. Mike Krasnowski on behalf of the Office of Attorney General, and I can just briefly provide some context of where we are on search warrants, how we got there, and what to expect going forward. So as the court is aware, the Office of Attorney General, the city, the coalition, and IMT have been meeting at regular intervals for structured negotiations regarding CPD's search warrant policies and practices. And by way of background as to how we got to this process, the coalition first raised the issue of CPD search warrant practices in August of 2020. The Office of Attorney General echoed those concerns in September of 2020. In January 2021, the coalition filed a motion to enforce the consent decree concerning CPD's execution of search warrants. That motion was stricken with leave to refile if a negotiated resolution was not reached. In March of 2022, the Office of Attorney General and the city entered into a stipulation agreeing the consent decree applies to CPD's search warrants. And that stipulation specifically requires that the city and CPD ensure search warrant policies and practices are not unlawfully discriminatory or retaliatory and occur in an unbiased, fair, and respectful manner. The CPD policies for planning, approval, execution, review, and review of search warrants must comply with national best practices and must comply with other consent decree requirements regarding impartial policing, use of force, and data requirements. So as part of that stipulation, the parties agreed that CPD's new and revised policy regarding search warrants would be submitted to OAG and the IMT for review and comment. So pursuant to that stipulation, CPD has produced draft search warrant policies in May of 2022, a revised search warrant policy suite in February 2023, and OAG and IMT have both times provided timely written comments aimed at improving the search warrant policy suite, ensuring its consistency with the consent decree and best practices. In April 2022, the coalition raised the possibility of structured negotiations between the coalition and the city regarding CPD search warrant practices. And throughout the past calendar year, the coalition and CPD have held multiple negotiation sessions, including structured negotiation sessions before the court. I believe there have been approximately 10 of these negotiations. And these negotiations have been productive and they are ongoing. As the court is aware, there's another date set in December for one such negotiation. So that's kind of where things are now. Negotiations are ongoing regarding the search warrant policy. As to where it would go in the future, the process, it will result in a revised search warrant policy, we expect. And pursuant to the stipulation, the city will submit for review and comment that policy for IMT and the Office of Attorney General. Thereafter, once there is a final search warrant policy that receives no objection letters from OAG and IMT, the city will post it on its website for public comment. And it is our hope that then the department can begin training relevant officers once there is a search warrant policy in place. So as to the immediate next steps, we look forward to a meeting with the court at the next settlement conference in December.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Krasnowski. I think that concludes the formal agenda. I know that the coalition is here, and if they would like to make a few brief comments, I'll hear those before we finish up with the monitor one more time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Michelle Garcia on behalf of the coalition and including the Communities United as plaintiffs. We thank you and the parties and the IMT for taking the time to have a public hearing. We believe that such public hearings only increases transparency, and will provide greater community trust. And we look forward to participating in future public hearings to learn where things stand and where things are going. We appreciate the Attorney General's office providing a status of our ongoing negotiations on search warrants as well.
Thank you. I think that you're exactly right that regular public hearings are necessary for transparency. If we're going to get if we're going to get any kind of confidence or buy into this process, we have to make sure that we are being transparent and that people know what's going on and have an opportunity to tell us if they disagree. We won't necessarily accept every observation that's made, but I want to hear from people and I want to know, because I think that's how we will reach the best resolution here, and one that we can have some confidence will work going forward. So thank you. Maggie, do anything that you or the independent monitoring team want to do to wrap things up?
Sure. Just briefly, I wanted to say thank you very much to the coalition, the OAG, and the city and CPD for their thoughtful comments today. And I concur and agree that transparency is very important. We look forward to having these hearings. We will have another one in December. It will be on the court's docket and also on our website, CPD Monitoring Team. We try to push it out to everyone that we have received contacts from. So we send it out to 1,000s of people. And as we get the dates for 2024, our goal is to have those dates set then for the whole year so that people can better schedule and know that when the court dates are. And our goal is to potentially be able to get topics beforehand, so then people will also be able to know the topics that are being discussed. And so we will work to be able to have that be presented to the public also. And so we really look forward to that and continuing to work with the parties, the coalition, the community. Thank you so much for attending, and the court.
Thank you. And just before we close, let me point out that I very much appreciate the monitors having sent out notice, because for reasons that elude me, we failed to put this hearing on our docket until just a couple of days ago. I'll do everything I can to make sure that mistake doesn't happen again. I know she's getting the word out to you, but it's also appropriate for the court to include these regularly scheduled events on the docket so that the public knows what's going on and can follow along. All right. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate your time this afternoon, and I appreciate the efforts that this difficult process has required, but has also generated. And I thank you for your hard work. And I'll see many of you later this year. Thank you.